Welcome to Food Conversations. Once again, a program about food and all its aspects, from planting seeds to eating, with a special emphasis on establishing food sovereignty in the Shuswap. I'm your host, Warren Bell, and you're listening to us on CKVS FM 93.7, the voice of the Shuswap, community radio for the people, with the people, and by the people. Now, we're having a little issue with the sound quality, so I'm going to pass you over to Steve Corey, my producer, and we'll see what Steve has to say.
We are having some technical difficulty with our sound coming in through Zoom. We're working on it to see if we can resolve the issue. However, we will do our best to give you, our guests, the best quality possible. And back to Warren.
Well, good morning again, and today we're very delighted to have as our guest, Jen Gamble, who's the executive director of the Salmon Arm Food Hub. And we're going to talk to Jen about how she got to be the executive director of this new organization, because as you have undoubtedly heard if you've listened to this show before, the trajectory that gets people to a prominent place in the food world is often a circuitous one, and often fascinating and interesting. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you, Warren.
Delighted to have you here today. And for our listener, just to remind you, we're doing this through Zoom. So Jen is in the comfort of her home. We're in the comfort of our air-conditioned studio in downtown Salmon Arm. And all provisions for COVID-19 are being observed. So Jen, your story has its roots in a garden, but the garden that you had your roots in was the family garden in your home in Armstrong when you were growing up. Tell us a little bit about that. It was sort of a starting point for you in a way.
It was a starting point. I grew up in a family that we always had a garden, and I spent a lot of time in the garden with my dad, and specifically we would grow tomatoes, as well as a lot of other things. And I think I remember tomatoes because they actually take a little bit more care and time. You have to continually, through the season, care for them.
They need to be nurtured a little bit more.
That's what it was about the tomatoes.
But gardens were part of your family history as well. Your grandfather had a garden during the war, during World War II.
Yeah, his family was from England, as my dad, and one of the ways that they supplemented their food during the war, and always, actually, was an allotment garden. In England, they're called allotments, which we know them as community gardens.
Oh, okay.
So he had two quite sizable allotments that he would grow for the family. And because he was a fisherman, he would bring the protein from the sea. And so that really was a lot of what they ate.
Somewhere in there, when you were 7 or 8, and you drive through the farm country down the Fraser Valley and the Lower Mainland, you came to a conclusion about your future. It was that you were going to be a farmer.
Yeah, I was a town girl, and I made this strange decision that I wanted to be a farmer. However, I didn't take a straight path there. I kind of forgot that that's what I had always kind of wanted to do. I think it was partly what I saw as a freedom of farming. And since I have now actually farmed, I know farming isn't that, all of that. But there are some pieces of it that really do free you in a way that many other jobs can.
Just for a little foreshadowing, sometimes when you are missing the farm, you think about a cold, wintry day in the fields of Vermont. What was that life-altering experience?
That's the opposite end idea that everybody has, that it's always beautiful to work outside and in the sunshine, and aren't you lucky to be a farmer? But I think that...
Jen, we're just having a little trouble still with our sound. We're going to go to music, and then we'll be back to you. Hello again. This is Food Conversations. We've come back after a significant problem with our sound system, but it seems to be working well. And we were talking a moment ago about the early experiences she had on her own garden with her father and about her grandfather, and how she had a yen to become a farmer. But set that aside. When you went off to university, Jen, you studied history instead, BC history.
I did, yes.
What was it that made you interested in BC history, just as a matter of fact, interest?
Actually, that came from the other side of my family. My mother is a historian and has been very involved in local history in Armstrong and involved in creating the museum there. So that was the other parent influence.
It's good to be influenced by both your parents, and especially your mother. Then you moved to Montreal and the east coast of the country and the continent.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Where you worked, you started to work on farms. What was the first step that got you into a farm kind of operation?
I actually ended up in Vermont, and a friend of mine took me to one of his friend's farms, and it was like rekindling a love of the land. And I realized, at that point in my life, when I'd been living in a city surrounded by concrete, that I was missing something. And that's what it was.
Do you think it had also something to do with growing up in a small community where you would have seen farms and land? I mean, BC's got a lot of farming land, and the Shuswap area's got a lot of farming as well. Was that some of the kind of memories that were coming back to you as well?
Yeah, I think that... I think when you grow up in a small rural town, that's kind of where you end up feeling most comfortable. And so I definitely, even when I moved to the city, I was like, this is my city phase. I always knew I'd go back.
And you also knew intrinsically somehow that the only kind of farms that you wanted to work on were organic farms. Do you have a sense of how you steered clear of sort of more conventional farming, large scale, you know, market gardens on a grand scale? What drew you to the organic world instead?
I think at the beginning it was just by chance, and that I happened into an organic farm. And it started out that I just figured that's how everyone farmed. And then when I moved on to other farms, I would pretty much look for those opportunities. And I think that one of the things that really did draw me to the organic sector was the sense of community that it seems to promote.
Did you ever know what would have been different if you'd gone to, say, a larger scale conventional farm with, say, more employees, larger land area, monocultural crops in very large acreages? Did it ever cross your mind it was just not on your radar?
It was pretty much not on my radar. Yeah. I mean, what I got out of farming was the connection to the land. And so I was able to do that on more small scale farms. And so it never occurred to me.
Well, I think the organic farming movement is very glad that never occurred to you, because you played a big role in organic farming since you've come back to this part of the world. You did come back here around 2004 after you got married and you were pregnant with your first child, your first daughter. And it didn't take too long for you to become involved in food here. How did that happen? You arrive in, you know, the familiar territory, and the next thing you know, you're working, I believe, in Eat Local. But that wasn't just, there were some steps that took place. How did you get into that?
Well, my partner and I had decided that we would definitely be farming. And so food was always a piece of it. When we moved back here, I had a small child. And so I was mostly at home. But I saw an ad in the local paper that piqued my interest about the Eat Local project that was starting to come to be in the Shuswap. And it was a really varied project. And I had some experience in every piece of it. So I decided to go for it. And that's where I met Kathleen Neen.
Let's pause for a moment, because Kathleen Neen was a very important person for you in your life. Tell us a little bit about Kathleen and why that was such an important coming together.
So Kathleen was, as you said, very important in my life, in my direction for the food work that I've gone on to do. She gave me a chance, as I like to say, when I was a frazzled mother of a young child. I started doing contract work in the food system realm. And Kathleen really helped direct, helped encourage. But more than that, she also helped, and I realized this later, not just me, but many, many, many others. And brought all of us together in the BC Food Systems Network. And so, again, it was that creation of community. And Kathleen was really the catalyst for this food systems community that was being built.
Do you think that having a young daughter also made you more sensitive to some of these issues? It's said that the largest demographic in our society that is concerned about environmental degradation is mothers with young children. Did you feel that impulse as well?
Yeah, definitely. But it also played off of what I already had, a concern about agriculture and food. And then you add to that, you're suddenly looking at the next generation. It really makes it more important.
And you'd already had a sort of a sense of how important food systems were. In other words, it's not just the farm you're working on or the food you're growing, but it's the whole context in which growing food takes place. That means something you were sensitive to, but Kathleen honed that, it seems to me, to a much more intense and finer level.
Yeah, and I think that part of what Kathleen, the beauty of Kathleen was that she was so encouraging and she would direct you, but never in a prescriptive way. So there was always a freedom there, and it was a really nourishing relationship, really.
Jen, you finally did get a farm. You finally bought 6 acres in the Salmon River Valley. What was that experience like, you becoming the owner, the co-owner, I guess, with your partner? What was that like to have your own farm?
It's a hard question to answer. It was probably because it was a little bit overwhelming, and it felt that something that we had worked towards for so many years was finally there, and it was a little bit hard to believe at some points. But of course, it was a great feeling, and it was a real sense of accomplishment to have been able to overcome all the barriers that are in place for people coming into farming that aren't necessarily inheriting farms.
And what was the first thing you did? Was the land ready to farm? Did you have to start manicuring a little bit? What kind of a situation were you in?
So there were already fields there. It was ready to go somewhat in that sense. But it always takes a number of years, I think, to actually know your land too. But we were fortunate. My partner at the time is a fantastic farmer and really knows what he's doing. So we had the benefit of all of that knowledge. And also I'd worked on farms for many years myself. So, we kind of went in with quite a bit of experience behind us.
And you discovered the hard work that you had remembered from your time in Vermont. There was a day when you were out in a cold, sleety day on the farm cutting broccoli. What memory did that bring back to you? What was that experience like? That was an interesting story.
That time in Vermont was the time I go back to anytime I'm feeling like, oh, farming is the most amazing life anyone could ever have. You know, you have to balance stuff like that. And in Vermont, the weather can be a little bit changeable. So late fall, I remember being out in the field with a crew of people cutting boxes of broccoli, and it was sleet and snow. My fingers were numb, and I was cutting, I don't know if you know, a broccoli stalk is really thick. And I was cutting stalks with this nice big blade, and I couldn't feel my fingers. And I was just hoping that I would come out of the day with all of my fingers intact. So anytime I'm really nostalgic for farming, I remember it's not all roses.
The cure for nostalgia is a real life memory sometimes. So you had your farm, but you also branched out. That system orientation in your perspective that you had not only learned from Kathleen, but also had developed in yourself when you were originally farming in Vermont, came to the fore, and you got involved with the COABC, the Certified Organic Association of BC. How did that happen?
It was a time when I decided I was ready. I had two small children, but I was ready to go back part-time to work, and it felt like a good fit, given that we were going to be farming and organic farming was what we knew. So the head office of the provincial association is actually in Vernon. So it just all fell into place, really.
And having two small children in a sort of part-time work setting was made a lot easier because your children were not kept out of, they didn't have to stay away from the kind of engagement in the work you were doing. Kathleen in particular had made it clear that children were welcome. That must have helped you.
Well, and that was mostly through any of the food systems work that I did. And that's basically how I was able to get back into doing any sort of work. The food systems work that I did, my children were very small when I was doing it. And because Kathleen was accommodating, and not only accommodating, but it was a priority to have children involved. I organized a gathering for the BC Food Systems Network, and my children were there. And so, you know, organizing a gathering is a big job on its own, but then you add in having your kids there too, and it does add something. But the beautiful part about that network was that the children, I was always confident my children were fine. Yes. No matter, you know, where they wandered off to, there were always people within that group that not only were tolerant of having random children walk up to them, but really enjoyed it and nurtured them.
Indeed.
As well.
Indeed. And I've been to some COABC meetings, and I've seen children wandering around just the way you've described it. It seems to be part of the community culture that is centered around organic and local food. It just seems to be a natural extension of that, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and I think it's an important part. Really, to me, the next generation is how we change the attitudes within our society. So incorporating them and teaching them how to be an active participant in our society in everything we do is a really important thing.
It would also seem to me that it's opens another gateway for women to be participating, and young women in particular, to be participating in gatherings around food, because you don't have to sequester your children in some faraway place. You can bring them into the setting, and they are respected and appreciated, as you say, nurtured. And so you must have made your level of anxiety about the whole process a little bit lower, knowing that there was this kind of welcoming community.
Yeah. I mean, and at one point I had to do an update, and my youngest daughter refused to go to the children's activity that they had going. And so I did the presentation with a 2.5-year-old on my hip, and nobody batted an eye. It was totally normal. Everyone was
it's totally kind of like,
accepting. It was great.
Sounds to me like civilization becoming truly civilized, which I think is what you're getting at. Then the COABC had been around for a while, started up in 1993. It was an organization composed of farmers who were starting out and learning together and about creating relationships. And you became its first, I think your first role officially was administrator, but then you became the executive director, which was essentially the same job. What did that involve? What was your work role in that organization?
So, I mean, like you said, we did a lot. It was a lot of relationship building, and also running the everyday operations of a provincial organization, right? But I think that no matter what the size of the organization, it's the relationships that really make the difference and really create momentum to move forward. And I think that when we as an organization started to prioritize some of the relationships outside, not only within, but outside of our organization, we really started to make a difference. And I saw it in the time that I was there. I saw the change in the relationship, for example, with the provincial government. It was from the time that I arrived to the time that I left, it was a completely different relationship.
An important part of that was a report by the Canadian Organic Trade Association on the growing role of organic farming. That was quite a stimulus. Tell us, everybody, how that worked out.
So that report was actually a turning point.
What year was that report, Jen? Roughly. In the farming world, it's the weather that matters more than the date.
It was a number of years ago.
That sounds very precise. Thank you. But it was a turning point. That's the really important thing.
It was a turning point. It was probably in the 2014-15, in that realm. And it was a turning point in that there's not been a lot of good data on the organic sector. And so a lot of what we as an organization were able to bring forward was anecdotal to government. And this report actually laid it out in statistical kind of language that government really loves. And we saw the shift that it created. And to me, part of it is that once you realize that if you can speak in somebody's language, they understand better. And so that, for me, that said, well, the organic sector needs to be collecting a little bit more data so that we can move forward our partnerships with government and others who speak those languages without losing our anecdotal community side. And so if you can move both of those things forward, you have a much better chance of success. So that report actually went to our provincial government, and they realized that the organic sector was growing and was projected to continue growing. So they really did want to make sure that there were no barriers to that growth.
The actual outcome was that the provincial government started to put in place some regulatory language around organic farming, which was new.
Yeah. So from the time that I arrived, our organization had been wanting this this regulatory move, and the government had not really seen a need.
They just didn't recognize organic farming as a real independent way of doing things.
Yeah. And so the report really helped them see that. And suddenly they were talking about the need for the regulations. And so it really did help move forward the partnership together. It took years to create, to do the consultation and create all of the work behind a regulation.
I was standing in at the COABC meeting where the then Minister of Agriculture, who was a BC Liberal, was speaking, and Lena Popham, the NDP critic, was standing in the back of the room near me. And that was quite a moment. That was quite a moment. It was announced at the COABC meeting that the regulations were in place. There seemed to be a general lifting of spirits in a room.
It was something that the organization had wanted for years. And so it really was, it was a great win for the organization.
Yeah, Lena Popham was commenting that he's making it sound like it was his idea, but we had to push for a very long time to get it to happen.
Yes. And Lena Popham, who is the current Minister of Agriculture, actually was an organic farmer herself.
Indeed. Yes, it's like you've said, for your own experience, if you've had it, some of that under your belt, it makes a big difference. Now, around that time, in addition, another document came out of a very different nature, and that was a document from the conventional agricultural industry called The Real Dirt on Farming. And listeners can't see, but Jen has got a big smile on her face when I brought that one up for interesting reasons. Tell some more about that one, Jen.
That document was interesting for a couple of reasons. First of all, the big smile worn was, of course, because when I read it, it really incensed me, and I could hardly speak about it. I still can hardly speak, but as I got a little bit of space from it, I realized that what it actually indicated was that the organic farming movement had grown to the point where it was concerning to non-organic production. And this was an attempt to ensure that it didn't go any further. And it was an attempt to re-educate or show the opposite side to consumers. And in that sense, it really made me feel that organic agriculture, sustainable farming, it's really arrived. And I think part of that reason is because the consumer base had grown so much and was demanding it. And that is what made the non-organic producers recognize it.
They had to pay attention to you. So, Jennifer, talking about agriculture involving organic and local food production coming of age, one point that I can mention is that just recently, Patterson Food Groups, Jimmy Patterson's very large organization with billions of dollars and engagement in multiple fields, has just purchased a set of operations called Nature's Fair. And although this may create some anxiety, it also indicates exactly what you're saying. And that is that organic and local and healthy food production and consumption has become such an issue that even the conventional world, the ultimate complement is to buy some of the already established businesses in this field. So I think your point is very well taken. Even more important, though, on a ground level, is the relationship between the COABC and the Young Agrarians. And that began shortly after the Young Agrarians came into existence. Maybe you can talk about that relationship.
Yeah, so the Young Agrarians it's a fantastic organization. So if you don't know it, look them up.
Well, tell listeners what it really involves, because I think it's important. I agree with you.
So the Young Agrarians are about bringing the sort of the next generation into farming. And there's been so much energy from the people that involved in that organization that it really has taken off. And I think that right near the beginning, Sarah Dent is the real fireball behind all of it and the go-getter. So Sarah came to me in my role with COABC and said, we want to apply for all this funding and we need an industry partner or they won't look at us. So COABC became the Young Agrarians industry partner. And it was a great relationship, mutually beneficial. For COABC, it meant that what we were supporting was the next generation of farming, and they and the people coming into the Young Agrarians were all concerned with sustainable farming. And most of them are moving towards organic certification. And this was a great partnership. And I think that, in a sense, that partnership has rejuvenated the organization. We've seen a lot of people coming through the organization, attending our conferences, and now joining the board. This new flux of young people, really passionate about organic food and organic agriculture. And I think that that has been a huge benefit to the organic sector in general.
You must be seeing yourself out in the fields of Vermont and in your own farm, sort of by proxy, watching this whole, as it were, a new generation of farmers, most of them not from farming families, most of them, and a large number of them women, too.
Yeah, it's true. And because, as I sort of mentioned before, when you don't come from a farming family, then sometimes there are additional barriers, such as access to land, that make it a little bit more challenging. And so Young Agrarians has done a really great job of addressing challenges like that through their, they've created a land matching program to lease land. So the program really was grassroots. It took new entrants, young farmers, asked them what the problems were, and then worked to address those problems.
I'll just remind listeners that there are two podcasts involving Tessa Wetherill, who is the land matching coordinator for this area, online at the CKVS website. And so if listeners want to hear more detail about that land matching program that Jen just spoke of, you can certainly find out a very animated and really passionate discussion of what Tessa called marriage counseling between farmers and landowners who want to have a good relationship but need a little help to get there. Tessa also mentioned that her coursework at the Justice Institute on mediation and communication was a very important part of what she was doing. Now, despite those moments of nostalgia, which you correct by recalling what it was like cutting broccoli in the fields of Vermont, you are now not on a farm. Your partner is still running the farm that you used to run together, but you're now renting a place, longing for a little garden space at all times, and keeping that kind of foot in the door. You're also working on your master's degree in community development at UVic. Describe what your program is like there.
So the program at UVic, it's an online program, which is now all the programs are online. However, this was actually meant to be online. It's about how we work with and within community to develop our own resources. It's it's been a really great program and a very good experience. I've really enjoyed a number of the classes, and I'm just moving into choosing a thesis topic. So that's going to be interesting. I assume it'll be something to do with agriculture.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, yeah. It's a theme that seems to run through my life wherever and whatever I'm doing.
Well, Jen, let's allow you to announce to the waiting audience that's listening to this program what you think your thesis might be. What are the ideas that are running through your mind as you reflect on that?
So I think that's not fair.
Okay, we'll pass that topic up.
I will say what my forerunner right now is something to do with women in agriculture and leadership, and leadership. I'll leave it there.
You know what? I think everybody who's listening to the show would be absolutely delighted to know that that was where your mind was turning, because that is, in fact, a very profound theme in agriculture in BC. BC is a leader in young women farmers coming on stream, and I think we'd all encourage you to consider that as a topic. You also have your daughters are now 13 and 16, and you're watching them grow up. What do you think of their mother, who's engaged in the food world, and does it ever come up as a topic at the dinner table?
They're actually very engaged kids. I hesitate to say kids because they're not really kids. They're a little bit beyond that.
They'll be voting soon if all goes well.
And actually, they're teenagers, right? So, yes. But as it were, they have different interests. Mm-hmm. But I would say that having a grounding in food and where your food comes from is a piece that is really important, because no matter where they go and what they do in their lives, they will always have to be a part of our food system.
Sure.
And so knowing and having an understanding is really important.
And you also know from your own experience that you don't just follow a straight line going from A to B. And it's probably better for most of us in this world to have a little variation on our theme that runs through our minds, but animate it with different kinds of experiences. You've also...
I would say that they're both very engaged. Yes. And I think that is a result of some of the experiences that they had as younger kids, being accepted and listened to at places like the BC Food Systems Network.
I think it's generally recognized as a sign of good parenting if your kids are engaged, but they don't necessarily become clones of their parents. So that sounds like a very good sign.
It can be frustrating, though, if they don't have my opinion.
Well, you just have to refine it further to convince them that you're right. Now, you've also taken on this new role with the Food Hub. The Food Hub didn't just, again, like most of these enterprises, spring out of the earth. It was the result of some groundwork. Describe the groundwork that led up to the Food Hub.
The Food Hub concept came about in a provincial way, and it was actually Lana Popham, the current Minister of Agriculture, who really has taken on this idea that a provincial food hub network is the way to go. So within Salmon Arm, a few people kind of got wind of this and started to, I'm going to say lobby, but maybe have discussions with Lana, maybe is the better way to say it, about having a food hub here in Salmon Arm, in the Shuswap. We are very cultural area, and having a processing place to support some of that agricultural production would be very valuable, was their argument. And it actually was it came then to the Salmon Arm Economic Development Society, and they began by writing a feasibility study
This is a tale of two Lanas. There's a Lana in town here, Lana Fitt, and Lana Popham. And that had a lot to do with it. Both the Lanas played an important role.
Yes, Lana Fitt is the executive director of the Seminole Economic Development Society. And so she and Chad Shipmaker created the feasibility study for the food hub. And then from there, Chad brought me on board to work on the business plan for the food hub. And then from there, the business plan got accepted by the province and we were awarded the funding. So then it's been all systems go.
So Lana number two spoke to Lana number one and the system took off. The program, and you're now the executive director, the program and your role in it meant that people knew in this community about your work with other food systems. Is that when Chad Shipmaker got in touch with you, did you sense that you were already creating a sort of a profile that meant that people would know that you had expertise in this area and that would be useful for them when they were starting it up?
Well, it is a small town, so I don't know that I can actually really do anything without other people knowing. And the fact is I have been here for a number of years doing this type of work. So I'm not surprised that people may know what I do mostly and what my concerns and passions are. So I guess so.
Yes, I guess it's too late now. They know your line.
Yeah, the cat's out of the bag.
The cat is out of the bag. We're going to draw the show to a close now. Thank you very much for being with us today, Jen.
Thank you, Warren.